Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Good morning. Welcome back. It is Hardline here on News Radio 930 WBEN. Joe Beamer with you for 49 more minutes. That's all you have to put up with me. 49 more minutes. And a programming note, Hardline will be off the air next week. It's Labor Day weekend. And let's be honest, I'll be out of town. Also, I said on Friday that I would be in for Tom tomorrow. Well, Tom is in tomorrow. So don't worry. The full lineup is here tomorrow, except our good friend Brian Mazurowski is on his way back. But the lineup will be in full. It'll be a new morning. It'll be B-Maz and Beamer. It'll be David Bellavia, Tom Bowerly, and Tom Puckett. So just a little programming note to kick off your week. Now, on Friday, we had a push from Buffalo Mayor Byron Brown to get on the ballot to run against India Walton in the mayoral election coming up this November. Well, let's see how that went. We have Republican Election Commissioner Ralph Moore on. Ralph, good morning.
Good morning, Joe.
Ralph, what happened Friday with the mayor's push to get on the ballot?
Well, Friday, the Board of Elections conducted a hearing, which was an administrative prerequisite to Mayor Brown bringing a legal action to determine whether his name would appear on the ballot based upon the petitions that he filed with the Board of Elections. The board noted that we listed arguments from the attorneys for both sides, and the board determined that the petitions were filed late and that the board had jurisdiction, therefore, to decline putting the name of Byron Brown on the ballot, but he would still be a write-in candidate and could still pursue a write-in campaign for the November election. I'm sure that decision is going to be challenged in court.
Now, you said attorneys from both sides. Did India Walton have attorneys at this hearing going against the push?
Yes, she did. What we did is we went through the process of what Mayor Brown's efforts were. We tried to characterize what the legal arguments were in support of him putting his name on the ballot, and then we allowed an opportunity. We allowed his attorney to expand on it, and then we allowed an opportunity for India Walton's attorneys to dispute it.
Now, you said that this will be challenged in court. What kind of challenges will we see, and what is the date that this has to be decided by?
Well, I figure I'm not positive that it will go to court. I suspect that it will go to court. We've been informed that a court challenge would be filed if it hasn't already been electronically filed within the next day or two. The date by which the Board of Elections certifies the ballot would be September 9th. At that point, we would be finalizing the ballot, starting to print it. We have had instances in the past where past that certification date, courts have ordered us to change the ballot. And, you know, obviously we would follow any court directive that was issued. What that might mean, however, is that people that would be receiving absentee ballots, military personnel, people overseas, permanently disabled individuals who receive their ballots early may end up getting a second ballot if Mayor Brown were to prevail, which would, you know, contain his name. So that would cause some confusion to the voters, but usually in those instances, we accompany with a letter and try to explain what occurred.
Now, Ralph, you might not be able to answer this next question, but do you see any potential where this plays out of Mayor Byron Brown winning one of those court appeals?
Well, the arguments which were advanced by the attorney for Mayor Brown were coherent, and they were based on some court cases. The court cases, however, were early court cases. They were before changes in the election law and changes in federal law. And what Mayor Brown's attorney argued was that the fact that the state of New York went and changed the date of the independent nominating petition filing to a date prior to the election was too early. Now, the Board of Elections, while we may be sympathetic with that argument, while we may think that the legislature picked the wrong dates and should have made it later, we don't have the authority to declare that unconstitutional. That obviously has to be done by a judge. And the attorney for Mayor Brown acknowledged that. The issue before the board, because we are a ministerial board, we act on what's on the face of the document and the laws that are applied, was whether the late filing of the petition can be excused and whether his name could be placed on the ballot regardless of any legal argument by the Board of Elections. And we've looked at the election law. We've looked at the precedent that the Board of Elections has established in the past. We've looked at court cases, and we determined that we did not have that authority to put him on the ballot.
Ralph, you know, someone put this text on the Volkswagen of Orchard Park text board, and I think it's a good question. Why was India Walton's campaign involved with the mayor's case? Would this have been, if there were three people on the ballot, would all three of them been represented at this hearing?
Yeah, we allow all the candidates that are affected to be present at the hearing and to make their arguments. We tried to have it open. It was open to the public. We, of course, were in a crammed room, and we had to try to comply with social distancing, so we allowed for a Zoom presentation. Which Mayor Brown's attorney did avail himself of that. But we like to hear all the sides. We like to hear the public input. And if there's something that the Board of Elections missing, we wanted somebody to raise that up and bring it to our attention. And we listened to the arguments on both sides. And while the merits of the arguments made by Mayor Brown may have some validity, we did not have the authority to say, well, the legislature should have changed the dates, and should have, when they changed the dates, they made it too early and they should have done it later, so therefore we're just going to let you on the ballot. Everybody had a set of rules by which they played on. All the sheriff candidates, it might be noted, are on an independent party line. Despite the earlier date, they all went and filed independent nominating petitions. There are a number of town candidates and town offices that are on independent party lines. There's two court cases regarding the town of Amherst independent party candidates, which are currently working their way through the courts. So there was an opportunity. It may not have been the opportunity that Mayor Brown desired. He may have wanted it to wait until after the primary election, but the timetable that the state legislature determined and whatever wisdom they had didn't allow for that. So we followed the timetable that was set out in the law.
All right, Ralph, let's play a hypothetical here. Say Mayor Brown, you know, everything goes the way it is right now, and Mayor Brown continues with his write-in campaign. And say on Election Day, you know, we count the votes, and it looks like Mayor Brown's write-ins have more than India Walton's. With all the court challenges, how long would it be to make a write-in victory an official victory?
Well, it could take quite a while through the courts. What we will know on Election Day is whether it's possible that Mayor Brown had more write-in votes than Andy Walton had on the machine. That would be able to be determined by the number of write-in votes are tabulated. Although we don't know who they're tabulated for, they could be for Mayor Brown, they could be for Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, they could be for a number of other candidates that have expressed interest in running for mayor. But we'll know the total number of write-in votes that were cast. Plus, we'll also know the number of votes that were not cast in that column, which could potentially be a write-in vote where somebody didn't do it properly by filling in the oval. Now, a write-in vote for an office has to be done in the column in which that public office is listed. And we ask people and we request that they fill in the oval for the write-in so the vote can be tabulated as a write-in. However, if somebody mistakes that, doesn't put it in the proper box, but it's in the same column, if they put it in the proper box but don't fill in the oval, that still would count as a write-in vote. And the Board of Elections, after election night, collects all the ballots across the entire city of Buffalo and will be going through them with a hand count and a hand look to see whether a write-in vote was cast and who that was cast for. So we'll know on election night whether it's possible, but we won't know. We won't be able to declare a victor that night unless the number of votes that India Walton got in the machine exceeds the number of write-in votes and the number of blanks that are for that office.
Ralph, it'll be interesting to follow. You know, I am a political nerd, and I cannot wait to see how this plays out. And I'm sure we will be talking about it more as Election Day gets near. Thank you so much for joining me this Sunday.
You're very welcome.
That is Ralph Moore, GOP Elections Commissioner in Erie County. Now, you heard what happened. Here's the mayor's reaction to what happened on Friday. This is Mayor Byron Brown reacting to the Board of Elections decision that you just heard Ralph Moore go into detail of what happened on Friday.
Yeah, the Board of Elections made a determination today that we respectfully disagree with. We will continue to pursue our legal options. We submitted a petition with more than five times the required signatures, over 3,700 residents of the city of Buffalo saying that they want to support my candidacy for mayor. We've also seen thousands of people sign up for the Write Down Byron Brown campaign. So we are confident in the strength of our campaign going into the November 2nd general election.
What are your legal options?
Well, as I've mentioned before, we've retained attorneys. We knew, however this went, that it would go to a court process, and we have retained attorneys, and we respectfully disagree with the Board of Elections, and we will move forward now with our other legal options.
Are you surprised?
No surprise whatsoever. We anticipated this, and we're prepared for it.
Mayor, speaking of attorneys, how much money
I don't even know. I don't worry about the spending. I just focus on the campaigning, and I can tell you that the Write Down Byron Brown campaign is on fire. It's hot, just like it is today.
And another question, Mayor. I want to know what specific campaign platforms on the website explain to the voters where you stand on various issues.
Well, you know, we've talked a lot about where we stand. The voters know where I stand on issues, strong on public safety, strong on development, job creation, a focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Been a champion of affordable housing in the city of Buffalo. So it's very clear where I stand on the issues. A lot of accomplishments as mayor of the city of Buffalo. We've cut the tax rate in the city to the lowest level in over 25 years. So where I stand on the issues and what we've been able to accomplish with the people of Buffalo is very clear.
You can say that today was a victory for India Walton with what happened at the DOE. Do you feel more pressure now? Are you concerned after what happened today?
No, I don't feel pressure. Like I said, our campaign is on fire. It's hot, just like it is today. Thousands of people have signed up to assist us in this campaign, and over 3,700 people signed petitions saying that they'd like to vote for me as mayor of the city of Buffalo. So we feel very good about where we are. What happened today was not unanticipated, and we continue to move forward.
We've only got like 2 months till election. Do you have time to get these legal challenges taken care of?
We absolutely have time, but beyond that, we are pursuing a dual track, so I am a write-in candidate. This doesn't change that. And we're asking every voter in the city of Buffalo who wants to continue progress in our city, who doesn't want to see our city go backwards, we're asking them to write down Byron Brown in early voting or the November 2nd general election.
What do you think your chances are of getting on the ballot?
We will continue to pursue it. As we've said to the voters of this community, we are fighting for the future of the city of Buffalo, and we will continue to work as hard as we can for the future of this community.
Is there a hard deadline in which you need to meet to get on the ballot? What is that?
You know, I'm not worried about deadlines. I'm worried about reaching every single voter. That's why I'm going door to door, knocking on doors, going to events, talking to people. We're asking everyone, November 2nd or early voting, if they vote early, to write down Byron Brown for the November general election.
And that was Mayor Byron Brown, his reaction to the Board of Elections decision. And before that, you heard my interview with Ralph Moore going into detail, describing exactly how that decision was made on Friday. When we come back, we are speaking with Nick Rathode. All the stuff that's been going on nationally here, he'll be joining us from the great state of Virginia to break down the situation in Afghanistan, and also Governor Cuomo's resignation and Kathy Hochul's first few days from a national standpoint. And I'm sure there's other things we'll talk about as well. It is Hardline. We're back after news, an update on Hurricane Ida here on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Well, welcome back. It is Hardline here on News Radio 930 WBEN. Final segment of the day. But don't worry, we're back to normal programming tomorrow. The normal schedule returns, and I will be joining you, as always, at 9 a.m. tomorrow. But we still have a segment left today and a lot to get to, a lot going on the national scene. And who better to break it down with us than Nick Rathode joining us again. Nick, welcome back to the show.
Hey, great to be back. Thanks for having me.
And by the way, Nick was President Barack Obama's special assistant and deputy director for intergovernmental affairs in the office of the president. Now, Nick, speaking of the office of the president, I'd like your breakdown of the situation in Afghanistan, where you think President Biden has done well and where you think he may have misstepped.
Yeah, that is a good question. He was basically left, I think, with a very difficult decision to make. You know, Donald Trump and his administration had negotiated this deal with the Taliban because Trump wanted out. And, they had this timetable to leave. The Taliban had agreed to not attack Americans and not, have Afghanistan as a place for terrorism or terrorist acts to occur against the U.S. in exchange. We would leave the country. And that timetable was set with a deadline of September 11th. And at the same time, you know, the State Department had been gutted under the Trump administration. And there were all of these other things that had happened. And so when Biden walked in, he was faced with the situation where he had to either surge troops, continue this 20-year war, or, you know, get out. And the best way to do that was to build off of Trump's agreement, and that's what he did. It quickly fell, as we know. So what I think that he did well is move forward on the policy to get out. I think that is the right decision. I think Americans believe that's the right decision. We've been there for 20 years. It's time to go. And, you know, I think where there were some missteps, obviously, was in the execution of the removal. We should have been getting people out of there a lot sooner and not have this crisis now at the airport where basically people are essentially sitting ducks. And we saw, sadly, you know, what happened a couple of days ago with the bombing there. And the situation just continues to get worse. And my hopes and prayers are that we can get everybody out, no more casualties, and end this without any more of these problems. So that was a very, very difficult situation, Joe.
Yeah, for sure. Now, you know, a few weeks from now when we are out of Afghanistan, and I agree with you, I hope and pray that we can get everyone out and that we don't have any more casualties. Do you see any shuffling around of personnel within the Biden administration after what's gone on in Afghanistan?
I think it's difficult. I mean, I know there's calls for the Secretary of State, for Jake Sullivan, who's his top advisor, and others to either step down or be removed. I know the Republicans are trying to move towards impeachment, which is just ridiculous to me, especially at this moment when Americans are being killed and attacked. But I think everyone will stay in place. This is, you know, having sat and been in the White House, you know, and for whatever reason, it's usually August where these things happen, where it's just crisis after crisis, that it is a very difficult time, but Biden is showing great leadership in this moment. I think he needs to stick with his team and get us out of where all of these multiple crises that are currently happening. So I imagine he sticks with the team and just keeps forging ahead, you know, and despite the calls for changes.
Now, before what's going on in Afghanistan, before we've had this to talk about for 2 weeks, we did see some polling coming out that says not too favorable of the Vice President Kamala Harris. And I've noticed that she has not been she's not been around the administration as much. I know she was overseas. Do you think that the polling of the Vice President has to do with her not being as visible? And do you see those becoming more favorable as the next 3 years go on?
Good question. I mean, I think generally, you know, Kamala Harris needs to find kind of an identity within the administration. And that is what I think people are struggling with a little bit. You know, it's like what is her role in the administration? Who is she vis-a-vis the president? And what can she take on and kind of build her identity around? You know, under Obama, Joe Biden took on the Recovery Act. He was in charge of several different things. And I know that she's been put in charge, but people just don't fully understand really like what her role is. And I do think that the lack of visibility, especially in recent weeks, has also kind of contributed to that. Like, okay, trying to figure out, okay, who is she? What sort of leader is she? And can she step up in a moment like this as well and provide some leadership? And so that's where I think there is a little bit of struggle amongst Americans on defining in their minds, you know, who she is and what she actually is.
We also saw Congress, you know, making a push for voting acts. We talked about this last time with you, Nick, but we saw yesterday around the U.S. calls for Congress to bolster voting rights. It seems like this is still going on. How do you see this playing out, and what would be a bipartisan bill you would see getting through both houses?
Yeah, good question. So I actually took my kids down yesterday to the mall, National Mall here in Washington, D.C., to participate in the march. And it was interesting and really nice to see the level of energy amongst people for moving ahead and expanding our access to the ballot and pushing Congress to move ahead with legislation. You know, there are currently two bills that are sort of part of the discussion. One is the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, and the other one is the Senate Bill 1. I'm forgetting the name currently. And both of them are set up now. The House has passed both, and they're sort of languishing in the Senate. The version I think that that I think will end up passing and hopefully will pass is the one that Joe Manchin has indicated that he has more comfort with, which is the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. And essentially what that does is provide some additional protections under law for people to access the ballot and to vote. And it restores the pieces of the Voting Rights Act that was gutted in this decision called Shelby versus Holder. And it re-provides some of those protections. So I think some version will pass. I think it'll be more likely the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. And knock on wood, we'll get to a point where Joe Biden can sign that into law.
Do you ever see a situation play out where voter ID would be part of one of these things? You know, because I've talked with Congressman Brian Higgins, who is a Democrat, but he said if that's what it came to have a compromise, to have a bipartisan passing, that he would sign on for something that called for voter ID. Do you see any other Democrats signing on with that?
I think there are quite a few moderates that would sign on to that, especially if in exchange we can get greater access to the ballot. Some states have done it already. And it is very obtrusive, especially for people who don't have, you know, who are older, who come from certain marginalized communities, that type of thing, to be able to have to do that. But if that is a piece of broader legislation that does other things to expand access to the ballot, I think that's part of the sausage making that'll be up for debate. And I can see several Democrats going in that direction to get this bill over the finish line.
And I don't want to misquote the congressman. He said he would be in support of that if there was a condition that states would provide free IDs for those who didn't have them. So I just want to make sure that I add that. He said there would have to be a condition for free IDs for the states for him to agree. I don't want to misquote the congressman.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a smart play, that in exchange for that, where it wouldn't be so difficult to have that sort of compromise, I think would be smart. And the congressman's right on that.
Now, last time we talked to you, we still had Governor Andrew Cuomo here in New York State. Since we've talked to you, Nick, we've seen him resign and Governor Kathy Hochul take over. First, I want to know what you thought of the governor resigning here in New York State, something that I have to admit I did not see coming.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I also didn't see that coming. You know, Cuomo, pretty hard-headed guy, and a fighter. But you know, I think between the pressure of the legislature, I think National Democrats, Schumer and others weighing in, because they didn't want to kind of be tied to him, especially as you kind of start looking at the midterms, that there was enough pressure there to ask him to step down. And it was the right thing to do. I mean, there are several credible stories. These women were, harassed by him, and it was the right thing to do as a leader and as a human being. And so I'm glad he did. And, Governor Hochul, I think, has assumed the office and so far has done a good job. I mean, she's facing a lot of the similar crises that the rest of the country is in so many ways, between COVID, especially because with COVID, there was this eviction moratorium that got overturned. And she's jumping to action. You know, she just instituted the mask mandate for schools, which I think is a smart thing. She's calling a special emergency session up there. to address the eviction issues. And so she's jumping and springing into action, and I think is already doing a pretty good job.
What is the thoughts, you know, because Kathy Hochul, one of our own, Nick, the first Western New York governor for over 100 years. So, you know, to see Buffalo in the mansion in Albany, we're taking a lot of pride in that, and we're hoping that it also means a new stadium in Orchard Park. But what are the views on Kathy Hochul nationally so far, her short tenure as governor?
I think she's done a great job, and I think people are impressed by her. You know, the interviews I've seen, the conversations I've had here in Washington, people think it's refreshing to see it, and that she's already doing a good job, and she has a good team around her. You know, she just selected a strong lieutenant governor, and I think she's done a good job, and people are impressed. So congratulations to Buffalo for producing someone of great character and quality and experience to help lead the state forward.
But you know how New York State works? It's kind of a lot like Virginia. In New York State, downstate kind of controls the elections. In Virginia, it's Northern Virginia that kind of controls the elections. Do you think it'll be difficult for a moderate Democrat from upstate New York to get elected as governor?
No, you know, I think if she can prove herself to be competent to address some of these issues, people respect that and want strong leaders who can do right by them. Even here in Virginia, you know, we care about good governance. We care about people who can produce and, you know, make people feel better and their lives better and safer. And, you know, like I said, she's springing into action on a number of different fronts, doing the things that people, I think, will react positively to. And I do think she's setting herself up in a really strong way for election.
Nick, this week we also saw the FDA approve the Pfizer vaccine. Or was that last week? You know, everything is just blending together.
I know.
But the FDA approved the Pfizer vaccine, and, you know, it seems that we've kind of hit this wall when it comes to vaccinations. Do you see that approval of the FDA helping the administration get the messaging for vaccine out there?
I think so. You know, it provides some peace of mind that wasn't there before. You know, prior to this, it was under this emergency authorization, which, you know, I think people were still like, okay, let me wait and see. Let's see how people are reacting to it. See if anyone gets sick, that type of thing. And I think there is a group of people that now have probably, hopefully, some peace of mind and confidence that now it's been fully accepted by the FDA and approved, and we'll move ahead with the vaccine. You know, and then there's still probably this whole cohort of people, the conspiracy theorists and others who I think genuinely probably have some healthy distrust of government that may never get it. But the other thing actually that we're seeing too is in certain states where these numbers are rising, hospitals are at max capacities. I think people are actually looking around and they're like, okay, well, this is real. I need to protect myself. And I think that that's also driving some of the uptick in vaccinations. And there has been a considerable uptick, especially in the last several weeks. So I think between the FDA authorizing, between I think people seeing what's going on around them, you know, there is this uptick in vaccines, and I hope that continues.
Nick, I know you you go around and campaign, so you're very familiar with being on the campaign trail. And our mayoral race here, I think we talked about this a little bit last time you were on. Our mayoral race is our current mayor, who is a write-in candidate, against Democrat Socialist India Walton. And our mayor tried to make a push, Mayor Byron Brown, tried to make a push to get on the ballot Friday. He lost that. So it will be India Walton on the Democrat line versus Mayor Byron Brown as a write-in. How difficult is a write-in election, and does it help that he is an incumbent heading to the polls in November?
This will be a great case study for political science teachers, I think, in the country, because those dynamics are really dynamic there. Because, yes, usually, traditionally, write-in candidates, it's very, very difficult because you know, get let alone getting people to the polls is difficult. Getting them to know who they're voting for, you know, can be difficult often. And then, you know, just checking the box can be difficult. Now you're asking them to actively remember your name when they walk in, write your name down, and then, you know, and cast your ballot. So it is traditionally very difficult. But because someone might have a higher name identification, people are know and comfortable with that person. That gives them a little bit of an advantage in that way. But again, I think it's going to be an uphill climb, especially with that kind of dynamic going on. But it'll be fascinating to watch and see, if he can pull it off.
Yeah, and I know this election got a lot of attention. After the primary, when India Walton did defeat Mayor Byron Brown, you had people like AOC commenting on her victory. And so not only is he not on the ballot, but I think there's going to be also a lot of money coming in from outside of state to help India Walton. So it'll be interesting. It's the first time I can remember there actually being a mayoral election in Buffalo. Usually after the Democrat primary, you know who the winner is. So this is at least a first for me, being a host here on BEN, but I think it might be the first, you know, that I can remember in the last 20 years that we are having a mayoral election here in Buffalo. Well,
it's really fascinating, and I think in Buffalo it's unique, and I have a sense in the coming months and years that that type of dynamic is going to be playing out in other parts of the country as well.
Well, Nick, from the state of Virginia, Nick Rathode, and Nick, in 5 days, I will be in the beautiful state of Virginia for the Virginia Tech home opener, and I cannot tell you how excited I am to finally be back in Blacksburg, back in Lane Stadium, and hopefully witnessing what will be an upset because UNC, they are 5-point favorites. But I'm hoping to be in Virginia for an upset Friday night at 6 o'clock.
Well, there are a few places better than Blacksburg to be on a Saturday afternoon, so I'm jealous and excited for you. That's awesome.
Nick, it's always great catching up with you. Thanks again for joining the show, and hopefully we'll talk soon.
All right. Take care. Thanks for having me on.
That is Nick Rathode. He is a former Obama White House staffer, giving the Democratic perspective. Because as you know here on Hardline, you know my opinions, and you hear my opinions throughout the week, Monday through Friday. On Sundays, I get the opinions of all. And I want the opinions of those on the right and the opinions of those on the left. And it is nice that Nick will join us and give us the national perspective from the left side here on Hardline. Thank you so much for joining me. I'll be back here tomorrow at 9 a.m. And we have our normal programming back. It's a new morning from 5 to 9. BMAZ and Beamer, 9 to 10. David Bellavia, 10 to 2. Tom Bowerly, 2 to 6. And Tom Puckett letting you know what's happened from 6 to 7 with Buffalo's evening news. Meet the Press is next, and we will keep you up to date on everything going on with Hurricane Ida as it approaches landfall. We will keep you up to date right here on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.